to Friends to the Ends on Planet 104.6 FM. We kind of freaked ourselves out a little bit tonight because we thought we'd start off with a song before the introduction to my guest and the topic tonight. So thank you for joining in, listening to my radio show. And I'm joined tonight by Simon Pennington. Welcome, Simon. How are you?
Good, I'm good.
You're good. That's good. Probably, and it's an unusual way to kick off a show, but if there's any Stranglers listeners tonight, and if they've been to any Stranglers show, the reason we kicked this off was all about making sure that this is the song that they kick off their live shows. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. It's the song that gives me a tingle up my spine because it's what they've been playing before they come on stage every show for about 40 years.
40 years.
Yeah.
And so tonight, for the first time, we're actually going to spotlight a band and kind of, I guess, the things that you know, because you're, like, to me, a disciple of the Stranglers, and I've said that from day one. In fact, just before we kick into the next track, the first time I met Simon, we were working at ANZ Wealth, and I didn't quite know how to connect with them, and I thought, how can I find, because I kind of get on with most people, and I just couldn't work them out. And then we had this T-shirt day, and he walked in there, and he was wearing pretty much the T-shirt that you're wearing tonight, which is your Stranglers. I thought, there's my topic. And from there, we kind of had a wonderful music relationship, and we've been to a lot of Stranglers concerts, and tonight you're going to pretty much run the show, and you're going to talk us through the tracks, the memories, the things that bring to life the Stranglers for you. So it's over to you, Simon. What have we got coming up next? What's the next song?
Cool. Well, thanks for letting me share my addiction, my religion. The first song we're going to listen to is the very first song I ever heard from the Stranglers. I was tender 13 years of age at a kid's holiday camp, and it was the week that Elvis died, and all the kids were running around saying, oh no, my parents are going to freak out. And back then in 77, people were listening to ABBA and lots of disco stuff, and then all of a sudden this came on, and this is Peaches.
All right, let's hear Peaches.
Places to be, like down in the street or down in the sewer. or even on the end of a skewer.
Well, if you grew up on disco, that was quite something else. And when I first heard that, that just blew my mind. That bass was like a smack around the head.
Good old J.J. Brunel there playing it with a crankshaft, wasn't he? I mean, it's so distinctive, that sound.
And, of course, if you're 13, somebody singing about ogling peaches on the beach is like, yeah, that speaks to you too. So I'm not sure you could get away with it anymore.
I don't know if I understand quite what you're saying there, but is that what the song is about?
I'll explain it to you later.
All right, we are going to truck through some of these tracks, and Simon was very kind to let me have one song on his Stranglers playlist tonight, and I asked him if I could get Skin Deep on, and the wee story around this is I convinced my mum and dad to buy a video recorder back in 1985, and they were about $2,000 then, which would have been probably about $30,000 in today's terms, and the first video clip of all time that I recorded on it, I've still got the VHS, is Skin Deep. It came off Oral Sculpture. I thought the guys were, like, amazing. I loved it. It's kicking off with J.J. Brunel, your camera work going right through his legs, right through to the jet black on the drums, and Hugh Cornwall playing the guitar there. So we're going to play Skin Deep for you. It's a great track.
Starting to breathe.
crazy. Very cool. Great video clip. They weren't the best looking of fellas, probably other than JJ Brunel, to be fair. I mean, goodness me, Dave Greenfield. Someone said they looked a bit like a really bad Austin Powers at the time, which I thought was quite hurtful. So,
don't you say a bad thing about Dave.
Yes, and we're going to talk a bit about him later, aren't we? But what have we got coming up next?
Well, we're gonna go back to the early days again there. I think one of the things we wanted to talk about tonight was just how diverse some of this music was, really. When they started out, they were sort of described as punks because they came out at that time.
Yep.
But they were really a pub band, and they were nothing like punk at all. Firstly, they could play their instruments. Dave was into prog rock and psychedelic synthesizers and a bit of the occult back in the early days, so that wasn't very punk. And he had a moustache, and that wasn't very punk either.
It wasn't a very good moustache, to be fair.
Jet Black, the drummer, was in his 40s, so he was probably too old to be a punk.
He had an ice cream business as well, didn't he?
And an off-license. And Hugh Cornwell had a PhD in chemistry, and John Jack Burnell, the bass player, was a very highly trained classical guitarist who was given a bass by Hugh and said, "I need a bass player for my band, so come and get into it." And
thank goodness they did.
And if you listen to some of their later stuff, they sung about politics and genetic engineering and Japanese philosophy and all kinds of things that were just nothing really punky. But back in the day, they were like the thinking man's hooligan, really. They had big attitude, and they were menacing and dark as anything, and that's really what made me fall in love with them. So we're going to go back to the beginning now with a track that is just a killer live, and it's Get a Grip on Yourself.
Okay.
It's all about playing rock and roll.
Oh, let's play it then.
We'll be right back.
if I... my cousin Denise had the stranglers, and I'm stuttering now, Simon, you're putting me off. That's the other Simon. Actually, it's a bit of a pain tonight. I got Simon headphones in real life. One Simon on the left, one Simon on the right. Anyway, Denise, my cousin, had the stranglers, and that was my introduction. She had feline, and I was introduced to stranglers there. And this next track is... What are we going to play next, Simon?
So next we're moving on to the Black and White album, which is their third album. And the first two albums were songs they'd sort of developed from playing in pubs, and they recorded the first two albums very close together. But Black and White was different. They sort of made a name for themselves and got sent off to a studio. But the world was getting quite dark. Back in 1978, we had the Cold War, and... we had, in the UK, we had lots of civil unrest and unemployment, and it was the year before Margaret Thatcher arrived. And it's a very, very dark album. It's very difficult listening if you're not into it. But it's where they started to really move into being extremely creative and really showing that some of their musical skill and some of their lyric writing skill. And we're going to listen to Nice and Sleazy, which is a bit of a play on a Frank Sinatra title of Nice and Easy, but it's a very sleazy song.
Well, let's hear it. Their natural kind of position and seen quite as a dark kind of band, right?
Yes, they were. In fact, by the time I first saw them in 1979, they were calling themselves the Men in Black, and they were dressed in black, and all the drums were all blacked out, all the chrome bits were painted matte black, and they had this magnificent big raven backdrop with a spotlight shining out of its eye, sort of searching the audience. And
that would have been pretty cool. Whereabouts? Where did you see them that first gig?
That was on the Raven tour. I was first on at the Rainbow Theatre, I think it was.
Wow!
In October '79.
That's so cool.
And it fried my mind, really. There was a whole jostling pile of people down the front, all dressed in black, sort of jumping up and down in their sweaty leather jackets. And,
and you were there.
Ripping up seats and throwing them on the stage and getting a bit chaotic. But, by then they'd released the Raven album, and I think they could probably afford some slightly better drugs by then. It's a kind of album that you really need to listen to on headphones, because even after all these years, I'm still hearing new bits in it. It's very... very expanded sort of musical capability by then. Lots of sort of subtle harmonies of, you know, the guitars and keyboards sort of weaving in and out of each other. And the lyrics on that album go from Japanese philosophy to Viking mythology to Australian politics to the Shah of Iran to genetic engineering. And as a teenager growing up, you sort of started to think, my God, there's all these things out there that, you know, that these guys know about and think about. And it sort of, you know, opened your mind. So, we're going to listen to The Raven. This is my favourite Strangler song ever.
That's a huge... I've never heard you say that before. This is your favourite all-time Strangler song of all time.
Out loud.
Wow.
Mostly.
It's recorded now. Well, let's hear it.
Will you stop my wind?
Greenfield there, isn't he? He's just playing with tickling the ivories. What a gifted bastard he is, right? I mean, we're very lucky to have, well, you've seen him many times. We're going to touch on some of the gigs you've been to, but I was very fortunate to see him in this country for the last time, which was, what was that, in February?
In February, yeah.
February in 2020. Oh, bless you, Simon, yeah. I think everyone heard that, actually. Thanks very much for that.
Yeah, little did we know that that would be Dave's last show, sadly, because in May he'd succumbed to COVID, which was
pretty shitty.
Oh, a tragedy, really, to be honest. They not long announced their farewell tour that they were going to do.
Yeah.
Dave was 71 and still out there doing it every night, but wasn't to be. They're still planning a farewell tour at some point. Wasn't quite how they're going to do that.
Well, we hope
we still don't know, but
we hope that they do. And I think I saw him smiling, and I was wee way at the back. You're right up the front, of course, where you normally are when you go to those gigs. Exactly. But he did seem to be having a hell of a good time, and it kind of leads a little bit more into, you know, the Stranglers were two parts, or two major parts, right, with two different lead singers and changes.
And a patch in the middle.
And a little patch we aren't going to talk about because it was pretty crappy. With Hugh Cornwell leaving, giving up the ghost there, unfortunately, which I thought was very sad, but somehow they came back again and brought in Baz.
Yeah,
and what are your thoughts on that?
Back in 1990, Hugh Cornwell left. He was obviously a founder member and, you know, a co-writer of a lot of great material. They'd certainly gone off the ball a little bit by their own high standards, I think. And you could see that they weren't quite gelling.
Yeah.
When I went to their last ever show at the Alexandra Palace in 1990, and you could just feel something wasn't right.
Yep.
It just didn't look right, and, you know, woke up the next morning in the papers and Hugh had left, and I was heartbroken at the time. But they went through a bit of a period with the experimental lineup, and you know, it kept them going, I suppose. But it's not an era that I really love, I have to say. And then they went to a Mark III lineup with Baz Warne, their guitarist, taking over on vocal duties as well. And what Baz brings to the band is that sort of menacing sneer again, and that dark sense of humour.
Yeah.
He does not give a rat's
ass, right?
And he, like Hugh, he likes to take the piss out of the audience. And I'm not going to repeat you and never show some of the things I've seen him say to the audience, but it's just very funny. It's all good natured banter, but it's pretty, you know.
Him and JJ Brunel really seem to have gelled, and probably even seem to be more connected than they were with Hugh and JJ, right?
They are having a scream of a laugh when they're up there. They're just laughing and joking and having a great time, and just playing some good rock and roll.
And so, what's this track we're going to play next?
So this is a real life favourite, and it's a real favourite of mine. It's from an album from 2006 called Sweet 16, and the song's called Relentless.
Excellent. I can't wait to hear it again.
The day brings it on that you've been waiting.
Dave Greenfield. He's just blowing away. I mean, there's a little bit of 60s guitar jangly from Hugh. I mean, no, from Baz probably in that time. Sorry, yeah. A wee story on this. I went into a record store. I wanted to get Counting the Beat by the Swingers, but I couldn't remember the band, the name Swingers, so I could only find the Stranglers, and I thought, oh, that must be that. So I took it home. Mm-hmm. Bitterly disappointed. There was no Counting the Beat on it whatsoever. This little side show topic.
You're completely listening to me.
That's it. Don't you know the Counting? Anyway, it's your show, Simon. Carry on.
Carry on. Right.
Well, what's up
next, Relentless, Simon? Which is a song that
it's a great track.
Probably resonates with all of us aging fans, because it's all about the march of time and how you just can't wind it back anymore.
True. Enjoy it as you go.
But anyway, we're going to wind it back now to a very crazy little song. Mm-hmm. I think I said earlier on, the Stranglers came out with some very diverse and interesting sounds over the years.
Yes.
And they quite often release singles just to wind up their record company, and I reckon this might be one of them, because it's called Just Like Nothing on Earth, and it's all about aliens and UFO sightings.
Okay, well, why don't we play it?
Why don't we play it?
Sounds scary already. Thinking there's some serious shit going down there, so they've been smoking a lot of good drugs. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts?
So the Gospel According to the Men in Black was a concept album which is all about UFOs, and there's a lot of references to the Bible in there, and was that all really about aliens? And it's pretty deep. And,
yeah, sounds deep.
They were reading up on conspiracy theories about strange men dressed in black visiting people to hush up UFO sightings and all that kind of stuff. And then strange things started happening to them as well. Their gear got stolen, and all kinds of other weird things happened. And they got a bit paranoid, and it may or may not have been drug-related.
You were telling me a story, this is ages ago, about them when they were in America, mm-hmm. and their gear, their truck, mm-hmm. got stolen, right?
Yep.
And then didn't it turn up 20 years later or something like that? What happened there?
No.
Right? It didn't turn up?
No, the gig got stolen in very dodgy circumstances, and their manager had managed to not get it insured. And so, I mean, they lost everything.
Nothing.
They were stuffed. Yeah.
Mm.
And they had to finish their tour and rented gear. And, I guess they were just very resilient over the years. They took a lot of knocks and did a lot of things to themselves as well, which, like putting out funny singles that just amuse them, I think. But
they kind of like doing the two fingers to the record company from time to time.
They do indeed.
So this next track, what are we playing here?
So they love playing with different time signatures, and the musicians listening will know all about that. This is a 9/4 song, which means it's got five beats and then four beats, and it sort of catches up with itself eventually. I love this song for so many reasons. It's got Dave Greenfield singing on it, and he doesn't sing very often, but when he does, this could be straight off of a Vincent Price horror movie.
Right.
This is a scary song about a bad acid trip, and if you listen to it in the dark and you listen to the words, you're going to scare yourself up to it. And it's called Peasant in the Big Shitty.
Okay, let's hear it. Sounded a little wasted there, do you think, Simon?
I think he almost did one song on every album, and when he did sing, he was just brilliant. It was just so different, and we're gonna come back to that in a minute, because just so many great memories of Dave, and so yeah, that one's for him.
It's a biggie, right? I mean, I thought we've got time for a couple more tracks, but we also have had a little bit of time. I really want you to talk me through some of the gigs that you've been to, because you took me to my first Stringless gig, which was so cool. We're right up front, and that was at the Power Station, I think, in 2016. Mm-hmm. And then 2018 and 2020 this year, which actually, when you think about it, it was a magical moment, and it was in the Town Hall. But you fanatically went to see them in Auckland, then Wellington, then Christchurch, and then you popped over to the Tasman, and you went to Sydney, and you went to Brisbane, and
Melbourne,
and then you went to Japan.
Japan for me was huge. They played some gigs in Japan in the 70s, and they were the stuff of legends, and I didn't manage to get to go to those. But when we saw there was some dates in Japan coming up in November 2019, it was about 2 weeks out of my 40th anniversary of my first show back in 79, and I just thought, I have to go. And so myself and a good mate of mine, Mark, from who lives in Melbourne,
yep,
as a good old Essex boy, we had a quick chat on the phone, and we said, we have to do this. And
you did.
And we were lucky to get in touch with a friend of a friend, because you couldn't get tickets from a Japanese website if you couldn't speak Japanese.
No, it'd be a bit hard.
And this lovely lady over there got us some tickets on her credit card, and didn't know us from a hole in the ground, which blew us away a little bit. And we made the pilgrimage, and it was just a fantastic trip. It was very intimate. They were playing tiny little clubs of sort of 500 and 600 people, and it was really part of their farewell tour, to be honest. They just wanted to go back to Japan and meet some of their fans over there. And there was about 50 or 60 fanatical travelling Brits who were singing along to every song and
sipping
the beers, and some very passionate Japanese fans. So that was a very special memory for me.
And they kind of mixed up a whole lot of... They didn't play a formula every show. Was a little different. They'd throw something in which you would be pretty amazing. You'd hear songs that were a bit far back catalogue kind of stuff, and really mixing it up.
Well, when you've got 17 albums, you know, studio albums to choose from.
It's pretty cool. So the legacy of the Stranglers, and I guess, you know, from all that experience, are there anything that kind of comes to mind that kind of really grips you, in the sense of, you know, a real highlight of any of the shows that you went to during that period?
I'd say the third show in Tokyo was just... I was just in the zone. I mean, I was just absolutely bouncing around like a lunatic, and, you know, all my bones ached for days afterwards, but it just takes me back to when I was a teenager again. You know, the music just carries me away completely. I just get lost in it. And
it's a beautiful thing. And that, I guess that's why, you know, having a band that you love and following it through all those years, and we're talking 40 years.
And then some
as well.
Yeah.
So what about this next track, which is quite, you know, it's not a well-known one. Tell us about that.
Well, it's well-known if you're a Stranglers fan, because it's a real life favourite. So this is off of Black and White, and it's another song with a lot of visual imagery in it. It's all about a love affair, but it's called Toiler on the Sea.
Okay, well, let's give it a crack. That wasn't Toiler on the Sea, but the good thing was that if you weren't a Stranglers fan, you wouldn't know that. And
that was a glitch, because we've got CDs in
there. Oh, that's right. So yeah, we went a little low tech on this one. We made CDs because of the quality of the sound's better, Simon, actually, on CD. So shall we try this one?
dog. I had to find a dog. I was a toiler on the street. I was a toiler on the street. I was a toiler on the street. I was a toiler on the street.
Singing that, Simon, is that...
That's Hugh Cornwell.
Is that Hugh Cornwell?
Yeah, yep.
Listen to the keyboards, the combination around that, it's pretty attractive. Yes. Quite poppy. It does sound poppy, actually, a wee bit. Not really.
They used to say that it was like their version of Riders on the Storm, because they could play it live and they would just sort of keep it going and going and fade it out at the end.
And that's what we're going to do, actually start fading that one out. It was a great track because we are running out of time. We've got one more track to go. Why did you want to finish with this song?
I've got to finish on the song for many reasons. It's the last song I saw Dave play live back in Auckland in February. So, you know, I'm shedding a bit of a tear here thinking about that. But also, my memories of Dave playing this song live, it's got this most amazing keyboard runs that go all the way through it. And yeah. His little game when this song came on would be to just down a little drinky, which would be actually a big bucket of rum and coke.
It looked like a pint, didn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, probably was a pint, yep. And while he was playing this amazing keyboard solo, he would just have a little drink and then throw the glass into the air and the crowd would all cheer. But, it's definitely, it's just a great memory of Dave. He would love doing it and just showcasing the skill of the man, really.
Right, I mean, I remember, I mean, 2020 has been a year of, it's been a tough year for a lot of people, and obviously to see Dave play this, hear that lead breaker on keyboards, it's pretty emotive. But I think we talked about this before. I mean, I saw a man that was smiling and enjoying every minute of his career and playing that. It was bloody great. And, you know, if you're going to go out, I mean, I think he went out with a pretty big smile there.
Yeah, he did. He was a legend and he was a gentleman.
And it's a great band. And I'll tell you what, Simon, you're a good man. And I loved you coming on tonight talking about, it's so cool finding people that love a band and know so much about them. I've seen you with them. They're passionate. Thank you so much for coming on my show. It's been bloody awesome. And
thanks for indulging my fetish.
We'll do that again some other time. We'll try and find another one later.
We'll do the five-part mini-series next time.
Love your work. See you, mate. Thanks, everyone, for listening to me.